Keep It is brought to you by Ava.
Every once in a while, when I'm about to pay off a card, I get a little alert that says, think of your credit score. Like, it'll warn me, like I'm a bad person. I'm doomed.
Child, my credit score is like SZA and Kiki in Good Days, okay?
You are out on the curb. Yeah.
If you can't remember the last time you thought about your credit score, baby, you're not alone. But here's the thing. A good score can mean better interest rates, lower payments, and bigger opportunities. And if you're thinking about making a big purchase this year, no one can help you prepare for it like Ava.
Ava is a credit building app that makes it super simple to improve your credit fast so you can get better rates on loans, pay off debt faster, and keep more money in your pocket. The Ava card gives you credit up to $2,500, and Ava reports your on-time payments to all major credit bureaus every day to help you build positive credit history quickly. The longer you stick with Ava, the higher your score can go, with most members seeing their credit go up in less than a week. Joining Ava starts at just $6 per month. There's no credit check, no interest, and no fees. So don't let your credit hold you back another day. I want to reiterate, this is not Ava, the Jessica Chastain movie that I think only Ira saw.
You know my tastes. Download the Ava app, spelled A-V-A, today. And when you join using our promo code KEEPIT, you'll get your first month free. This offer is only for our listeners. Get the Ava app and use promo code KEEPIT to get your first month. That's promo code KEEPIT. Thanks to Ava, and now go get yourself good credit. And we are back with an all-new episode of Keep It. I'm Ira Madison III, and unfortunately, last week was Lewis's last episode, and he's out. So, welcome our new co-host, Jay Jordan.
Hello! How are you doing, Ira?
This works because it's April Fool's Day today. Tomorrow, someone's going to be shook.
I'm in my seat like, I don't think going to Germany means he left.
Oh, you've been seeing the Berlin photos.
He went. That's a pilgrimage. Okay, that's a Hajj. Okay, that is a religious trip.
A white gay pilgrimage. That's the Mecca. Yeah.
Listen, Ramadan just ended, and now he gets to eat. Or he gets ate, whichever one.
Eat Mubangra.
Listen, hey, you need to chill out, Habibi, okay? Hey. This is a very culturally inclusive episode already. Look at us.
Last time you were here, they were like, you know, it got a little ethnic.
It got a little... well, also, because then we brought Tori Kelly, and we were like, Tori Kelly...
We were like,
Tori Kelly as a black woman. And she's like, you're right.
Tori, do you know you're black?
She knows.
She knew.
Tori Kelly did that thing where she was like, I did my 23andMe, y'all, and turns out I'm this much sub-Saharan African. And every black person was like, girl, we've heard the songs.
Yes, okay? Unlike when Demi Lovato was like, and I'm 1% African.
Yeah, hey, come on, Demetria Lovato. Come on. Niger Princess Demi Lovato, West African Queen, Demi Lovato, Afrobeats icon. Come on.
Speaking of another black icon, before we get into the episode, did you listen to the new Ari?
Oh my goodness. Because Dandelion, she said, plant the seed. And I said, okay, we're back.
Thank you.
We're back.
Blackiana was back. And I just want to let the girls know, my friends were asking, wait, is this song really giving all of that? And I was like, baby, have you listened to the lyrics to Dandelion?
Oh my
God. She says,
say it.
Now,
Preacher.
I got what you need. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking you should plant this seed.
Yes.
I get this sounds unserious. But baby boy, this is serious.
I'm obsessed. It's literally like one of those songs that definitely is a jump to a jump. Because the song is about fertilizing her garden so she can grow a dandelion so you can make a wish for whatever you want.
Blow on it. This is her hominy licks.
Blow on it to the center of the Ariana, I was listening to it at night and I was like, oh, this is like nasty. This right. is nasty.
And she starts with that Ma Rainey's black bottom horn.
Yes, Ma Rainey. What'd you call me? Watch yourself.
We know your verse.
Thank you. Well versed in Ariana. Listen, and this is a long tradition of songs about insemination. We have Honey by mm-hmm. Mariah Carey. We have Love Come Down. There are so many songs where women get to kind of show off, speaking of Berlin, their breeding kinks. And I'm so happy. And a lot of people are like, oh, aren't you? Isn't it tough because it's SpongeBob? I'm not thinking about Ethan right now. I'm thinking about Ariana Grande. And whatever she's envisioning, that's what I'm going to enjoy. It's great. Oh, it's so good.
Also, he is a straight man in theater, okay? He knows how to put it down.
He knows how to put it down. He okay. knows, you want to know? And you want to know even something else? If you are a redhead and you have made it that far in life, I just know you can fuck. I'm sorry. Mm. They're going extinct. They're endangered yeah. as a people. So he's actually a key indicator species. He's trying to make sure there are more redheads in the future. Are you listening, Red Hot Instagram page? He's trying to make more. Pepper Ann. Must you cool for seventh grade? Pepper Ann.
So are you also saying that Ed Sheeran knows how to put it down?
Ed Sheeran can put it down. I saw him dance in that video.
Oh, that's true.
Ed Sheeran had a song called Two Step. He had an original release. And then on the remix, he put Lil Baby on there. Ed Sheeran, there is a Nigerian or Jamaican princess in London that knows Ed Sheeran can put it down. I guarantee.
Shape of You was his I Like My Girls BBW.
Ed Sheeran said, a skinny woman can't do them, but point me to a big girl.
Okay. Nicki never fucked Drake. She never fucked Wade. But let's ask about Ed.
God. The complaints about it being ethnic, y'all were right. We're here already.
Well, this is going to be a fun episode because, first of all, Lewis is gone, which means we can talk about Marvel.
No, I mean, doesn't he like Marvel? They got Julia Louis-Dreyfus doing stuff. He likes Marvel. He likes the talent Marvel gets. And we can talk about Marvel.
He watched Thor Ragnarok because Cate Blanchett was in it and he regretted it.
Well, Cate Blanchett, that's when she was like going to drag shows and stuff. I thought her as Hela was amazing. I love Marvel. And that's why the announcement this past week was insane. It was insane to watch. But it felt like a party full invite. I'm sorry, Russo brothers. I love your work. I love your work. Listen, sometimes I need to waste 3 hours. But it was a live stream with chairs. Yeah. That's crazy. And you know what? I did watch a lot of them. But Ira, me and you both got excited for the same section of the reveal.
Well, we're going to get to that. And then we're also going to talk about internet shows.
Yes.
Listen, I mean, first of all, Pop the Balloon, as you know, is a very famous show.
Famous? We say famous.
Well, it's hood famous.
Okay, it's hood famous. You're okay, right.
It's hood famous.
It gets checks on the 1st and the 15th. It's hood famous. It can go to WIC and get some cheese, if that's what you're asking.
Well, now it's going to Netflix. And so we're going to talk about that show. We're going to talk about other internet shows. I'm sure there's a few you have thoughts on.
Ooh,
I've seen your
child.
Tweets. So we'll get into that. And then also, Elizabeth Moss is here with us this week. Now, Jay, is she black?
No, but she is a woman going through stuff. So
okay.
Yeah, look, on the show, she goes through some stuff. So
listen, I've seen The Handmaid's Tale, and the most disrespected woman in America is the black woman, but also Elizabeth Moss.
Yes, 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 yes.
And in Mad Men, too. They did her dirty.
Well, the thing about Mad Men is it really was such an important piece of TV history, and it did, truly shifted the way people even thought about AMC, that and Breaking Bad. But I think that her character in Mad Men is so different from the characters that she's played since. When you see a body of work like that, you have to be like, okay, girl, you can act. Because every now and then you go, she can act.
Yeah.
And also, once again, they be putting her through it. My husband would be watching episodes of Handmaid's Tale, and I would go, we are really abusing ourselves. Oh my, we need a break. I need a break.
And then it turned out he was just watching CNN.
I said, Jeffrey Toobin, put your dick away. Put it away.
So we will be right back with more Keep It. Keep It is brought to you by Planned Parenthood Federation of America. No matter what, your sexual and reproductive health decisions, including abortion, belong to you.
Planned Parenthood organizations are fighting for common sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies and futures and keep personal health care decisions between patients and their doctors, not unqualified lawmakers. Nearly 80% of Americans want that. The attacks on Planned Parenthood, our health care, our basic rights, they just don't stop. But you know what else doesn't stop? Planned Parenthood. The amazing staff and volunteers at Planned Parenthood health centers across the country do whatever they can to provide high-quality, affordable health care to 2 million annual patients, no matter what nonsense some people in power try to pull.
You can help. Donate to support Planned Parenthood at plannedparenthood.org/protect. That's plannedparenthood.org/protect.
Got stubborn spots, unwanted hair, or uneven skin? The CAPS Laser Center offers advanced solutions. They offer a full range of advanced laser treatments like Halo and Moxie that help reveal smoother, clearer, healthier-looking skin. CAPS is one of the top providers in the world for laser treatments, and their expert team delivers personalized care every step of the way. When you book your first Laser Center appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. So don't wait. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
Last week, we saw Marvel flaunting its chair budget in their teaser of Avengers Doomsday, which showed just how many actors did not appear on a shoot with Robert Downey Jr. Plus, Apple is going meta with the premiere of The Studio, in which Seth Rogen plays a frantic movie studio boss looking to make high art in a world full of IP spinoffs and big budget sequels. So, we're here to talk about all of that, and we watched all of this on our iPhones on the subway, as you're supposed to watch cinema and TV.
Yes, yes, yes.
And let's get into it, starting with big IP, big sequel, Avengers yes. Doomsday.
Sequel to a sequel to a sequel to a sequel to a recasting to a sequel. I love Robert Downey Jr. He's one of my favorite Romani people. So he's playing Victor Von Doom. And Doomsday, Avengers Doomsday, was kind of like thrown at audiences as like, oh, this is going to be the Secret Wars battle world, big multiversal kind of end game for this iteration of Marvel that will be a game changer. And we thought, oh, maybe we'll introduce the X-Men. We got confirmation because they started rolling out the chairs. We saw a bunch of people we already knew. But when Patrick Stewart's chair was announced, not the yellow floating chair, but probably, I put my fingers to my temples and I said, to me, my X-Men. And the rest of them showed up. Ira, I was happy. Listen, every now and then I'm like, I want to make art. Oh, I hate the fact you have to be TikTok famous and ask people what they do for a living to get any sort of traction in this industry. And these people say they're funny, but they really aren't. But whenever I see Rebecca Romijn Stamos in blue paint, I'm okay. You know what? Do whatever you want to do. Do whatever you want to do, please. I don't care. I don't care.
But the introduction of the X-Men into the cast was fantastic because we didn't get any recasts. We got original X-Men. We have Ian McKellen.
Yes.
We have Patrick Stewart. We have Alan Cumming. We have Rebecca Romijn, James Marsden.
Oh, and my goodness.
Thanks to Deadpool Wolverine, they're finally carting out Channing Tatum again as Gambit.
Hey, Channing Tatum, he put them Instagram pictures up. He said, y'all gonna do something with this. He said, I just went through a breakup. Y'all gonna do something with this. I can't play Lenny Kravitz in my house no more. No. Y'all, you gonna do something with that. Hey, I'm about to make a name for myself. Okay, this is the other thing that made me really excited. James Marsden has had like all these like really cool opportunities since Cyclops, but X3, and they kind of helped us in Days of Future Past, the very end, with the kind of the epilogue. I'm really excited for James Marsden. I love James mm-hmm. Marsden. I think he's such a charming and delightfully talented actor when it comes to like both being like a lovable everyman, but also he's so fucking handsome and he's so sweet. I'm so excited to see him in Cyclops, even if I know they're going to get rid of him or something like that. I'm really excited for James Marsden, and he's amazing. He was amazing as Corny Collins. He's amazing as Scott Summers.
He is a singer, by the way.
Enchanted and Hairspray.
Yes, I love James Marsden. And I'm like, I'm always waiting for a James Marsden renaissance.
Yeah. Also, Alan Cumming is back. This is what I'm going to say about Alan Cumming. I love a teleporter. Okay.
He is so good. And that is the reason why X2 is like.
He steals the show.
It's just X2 from the jump. Is a perfect film. And I love that movie. And I love Alan Cumming in it. And it is also so fun now to see Alan Cumming coming back as Nightcrawler, because Alan Cumming wasn't really giving you faggot before. And now Alan Cumming is sashaying around the Traitor's Castle.
Yes. Come on, Kurt Wagner. Kurt Wagner would be in Berlin. Okay.
Yeah.
That tale has many uses. Okay. No, I think it was like a really cool rollout. I think it's huge. I think it's a tentpole venture for Marvel. They are putting, I mean.
They need it.
Truly, the amount of assistance that's going to be needed. It's one of the biggest swings I've ever seen in my entire life. But if done correctly, I think there will be a big, big payoff. It is wild how there are only like 2 movies a year now. And that's going to definitely be one of them.
Yeah, it is sort of do or die for them.
Because it's doomsday. Doomsday.
I don't want to be rude here, but I saw Captain America: Brave New World.
Wait a second. You talking about the one where the president turns into a crazy red monster, the Red Hulk?
No, that was that also one? CNN.
God, okay, my bad.
Last night.
You talking about when the president turned into an angry red man and he was trying to punch a black man for trying to live in America? You talking about, wait a second, what was I watching? Was that the news or was it, I'm confused.
I watched that movie and I said, Marvel has lost the plot.
I'm a Marvel apologist. I'm bad. I'm in it. I've drank the Kool-Aid. Speaking of the studio, I have drank the Kool-Aid. There are so many heroes. If they told me they were going to do a Stiltman movie, I'd be like, y'all, give it a shot.
You know what? I would love a Stiltman because
I know who's going to be Stiltman? Kevin Hart. I'm kidding. I'm sorry, Kevin.
We all know I have a Spider-Man tattoo. That was my first tattoo. I loved Spider-Man back issues in high school.
Yes.
I remember finding an issue with the Stiltman on the fucking cover, and I was like, who is this nigga?
And the best part is, there is a point when you're a Marvel fan where you go, well, they're just putting anybody on the cover now. And you know what? That makes you feel so seen as a little black queer boy, because you go, they might put me on the cover one day. If Stiltman can make it, baby, I can make it.
They did that one issue too. Remember with that issue was like the little black kid. It was like he thought Spider-Man was black.
Oh yes. Yes. Also, there's so many other Spider-Men in the Spider, because they just also announced Spider-Man Brand New Day. So that's coming out. So listen, Tom, Zendaya, behave yourselves, okay? No hanky panky. We gonna delay it. Listen, kids, you're virgins until you're married, okay? I don't need nothing getting in the way of this. Y'all need to behave yourselves. I know, she's beautiful. You keep your hands off baby girl. Me and Ira are the gay uncles. Hey, I don't know what y'all do, but y'all sleep in separate beds when y'all come to visit us. I know y'all grown. Nah, hear you not. Keep your hands off her.
It's funny too, because we actually don't see. There was no announcement for Spider-Man in Avengers Doomsday. He's probably going to be in it. First of all, they know that his ass can't keep any secret. They kept him offset.
Okay, so there's another famous actor who cannot keep a secret. You know who it is? Mark Ruffalo. Mark Ruffalo, yes. You remember the very famous video? Don Cheadle. This is why I do love Don Cheadle. Literally is representative of so many audiences because Mark Ruffalo said, well, you know, everyone dies. And Don Cheadle went, no. Mark, you crazy. That's funny. And Mark Ruffalo went, no. And Don Cheadle went, Mark, are you real? That almost happened with Jason Momoa. Jason Momoa, he got cast as Lobo, and he's going to do the new James Gunn's the Superman movie. And he was doing an interview for the Minecraft movie, and this man literally grabbed his phone and was like, you want to see some on-set photos? And the publicist literally had to intercept him and go, no. You big, sexy, dumb Hawaiian, what's wrong with you? Stop it.
To be fair, I would love to see some pictures from the set of him as Lobo just because I feel like you need anything to help a DC movie at this point.
It is funny. Me and Ira, we going to shoot on Marvel, but the person we going to shoot on more, DC. Because David Zaslav just said, and I quote, oh, we're going to focus on Big IP. And I said, like, Superman, baby, who is letting you talk more? You're the president of Warner Brothers, a company that has owned all of the rights to DC since the 90s. And you're saying now we want to focus on big budget IP. What are you talking about? You've been focusing on big budget IP. What does that mean? You had the Justice League movie. You revamped a second DC verse for this go around the movies. What are you talking about? You talking about because of Barbie? Yes, we liked it. Why are you telling us to? I can't get started on that, man. Primarily because I want HBO special. But I truly cannot get started on that, man.
My friend Ty Sunderland, DJ, was recently putting on his Instagram. He was rewatching, speaking of Bryan Singer, Superman Returns.
James Marsden.
Parker Posey.
Come on. Where did Parker Posey went? Krypton. Kal-El.
It'd be a lot better than White Lotus. Well, we talked about that last week, and we got dragged in the YouTube comments, okay? Even the Marvel fans are probably going to be worse, but...
No, the Marvel fans are going to like us because we know ball. They're going to be like, well, they actually know comic books and they actually know the movies. Because we didn't say nothing. We didn't say nothing crazy. We're behaving ourselves.
The White Lotus fans, by the way, I just want to get this out of the way.
Say it.
Because there were some comments last week where people were like, well, you two don't like the slow burn of this season because you're addicted to TikTok. You're addicted to fast stories. I'm like, first of all, bitch, like the slow shit I watch on the Criterion Channel every fucking night, okay? I watch Days of Our Lives, okay? I'm used to a slow ass story that is going nowhere.
Because wait a minute. First of all, what I heard was that you called me young, and thank you. Thank you for that. If you think I'm addicted to TikTok. Secondly, people are if it's been three seasons of a show, one of the three seasons is going to be the third best season.
Right.
There's no malice in that. You're not even sending up saying people shouldn't watch it. You're saying, oh, it's kind of slow. Oh, it's kind of, okay, yeah. I mean, jerk off already. Do it. What are we waiting for? Come on. I don't like that reaction only because, like, you're cultured. They're saying this to you.
But they don't know. They don't know. They see people on YouTube and people just be getting on and talking. Everybody has a podcast now, okay? Everybody, every celebrity, every singer, every person. It's like every time you see somebody on the news too, it's always like a host of Blake podcast. And I was like, God damn, that's why I wrote a book. It can't be on my tombstone. I'm sorry.
Listen, write a book. If you can't write a book, read a book. If you can't read a book, see, that's the problem.
Do crowd work.
Oh, the crowd work situation. I'm going to get in so much trouble for saying this. The crowd work situation actually pisses me off when people go, oh, they're saving their material. They don't want to burn their material. And then 2 years later, they put out a special. I go, was this the material they were saving? This is what they saved?
You don't have to drag Hannah Burner like that.
I'm dragging everybody.
Okay.
I'm dragging everybody.
Before we move on to the studio, I just want to lastly say, too, what I'm very excited about for Avengers Doomsday is, and I get a lot of flack for this from other gays who are Marvel fans. Now, maybe the straight boys are into the Fantastic Four. But when I say I'm, like, excited for the upcoming Fantastic Four movie, that I love the Fantastic Four down. Like, the Fantastic Four was my first family, literally, before the Avengers, before X-Men. So I'm excited that Vanessa Kirby's in this movie as Sue Storm. I'm excited for Victor Von Doom. I'm excited for maybe we'll get a little taste of him in Fantastic Four, but I'm also happy that the villain is Galactus because I'm sick of a Fantastic Four movie with just Dr. Doom in it.
And you know what? I'm glad that you said that because they were the first family of Marvel. They come out 62. X-Men don't come out until 63.
61.
And here's something that I like think that people forget. People go, oh, the Fantastic Four is boring. Before we had any like cool, like superpower, like all these like multiversal films, we got two pretty good Fantastic Four movies.
Yeah.
We got blonde Jessica Alba.
Okay.
We got a blonde Latina. We got a Susan Storm.
When you get Jessica Alba cocking her head, doing her little,
force field.
Her force field against my man from Nip Tuck.
Yeah. Hey, also, if you don't like the Fantastic Four, anti-Semitic, the most famous Jewish superhero. Ben Grimm, and then Kitty Pryde, I think. But like, Ben Grimm is the most famous Jewish superhero. I think Eblen's doing it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's going to be amazing. He's going to be very funny in it. My take on the Fantastic Four is people are haters if it's not like the MCU as established or the X-Men because they go, oh, this is like a new thing I'm having to fold in. They're great. They have a great rogue gallery. They have a great family dynamic. They have a son.
They maybe have one of the best rogue gallery outside of like Batman, to be honest, and Spider-Man. Spider-Man, Batman, and Fantastic Four.
Yeah, and because if you read the comic books, Doomsday, I did this not because I wanted to rule the world. I just wanted to piss off Reed. If you don't know the comic book history, Dr. Doom delivered their daughter, Valeria. He was the doctor who made sure Sue Storm didn't lose her life delivering that baby. And he said, first of all, she's my grandchild now. That's my god baby.
It's okay? Best friend beef, okay?
She's my goddaughter, and she can come visit Latveria whenever she wants. She has a pass. She's good in this hood. Secondly, Reed, I still don't like you.
Yeah.
I still don't like
you. Because really, they want to fuck, to be honest. That's my theory. Reed and Victor, that's a love story. Sue's in the way.
Wake this up, because they have a child together. Very Lex and Superman. Doom and Reed have a child together, and that child is Valeria.
Mm.
If that's his godchild, and that's Reed's biological daughter, and she goes to see Dr. Doom all the time, they have to co-parent.
The first gay couple in Marvel was actually Victor and Reed.
Dr. Doom is saying, hey, I need my visitation. Dr. Doom is DDG.
Yeah.
Dr. Doom is DDG. I want to see my child. You know, my baby dad tripping. Talking about I don't got custody. I run a country.
So I'm actually very excited for Avengers Doomsday. No matter what I think of Brave New World and the previous Marvel movies, I'm actually very excited for Doomsday. I'm glad the Russo brothers are back where they belong, doing Marvel IP and not their own films.
And you know what, Russo brothers? Sneak another gay in. Have another gay be sad at a group therapy meeting.
It's going to be a postal worker.
A postal worker going to be like, well, you know, when I was delivering these gay-ass letters, I thought, what's Dr. Doom up to?
Okay, now speaking of IP, the studio is on Apple TV, and Apple TV is the best in the game.
Listen, as a former employee, you're right. You're not wrong. They be cooking up some good stuff. Keep buying phones. Keep buying computers. Keep making TV.
And Tim Cook is sort of one of the lesser evil of the billionaires ruining our lives.
Yeah. I try my best not to speak ill of other Southern sissies, especially ones who went to SEC schools. And you know what? Whenever Tim Cook finds out that Apple is making TV shows, he's going to be so excited.
He has no idea. He has no idea.
Because I think a gay man who went to Auburn is going to love the morning show. It's Jennifer Aniston. Okay, go ahead.
That's tea. And the studio is... Slow Horses is my actual jam on Apple TV, but this is maybe going to turn out to be one of my favorite TV shows. I was rewatching Entourage, as I'm wont to do. The male Sex in the City. More people need to be watching that.
Straight listeners, an ally. Yeah. You have an ally in Ira Madison.
I would recap the fuck out of Entourage for a podcast, just like Sex in the City people do. I love that show.
Jeremy Piven has famously done nothing wrong.
Yeah.
Eat some sushi and call out again.
Jeremy Piven, by the way, is connected to Elizabeth Moss in the fact that they were both in Speed the Plow by David Mamet. Well, except you remember that's Jeremy Piven
just,
left.
That's what I
Speed
just referenced.
The Plow.
You can't eat that much sushi. Eating sushi every day?
Yeah. But the studio is Seth Rogen. Is starring as a studio head who is basically working for Zaslav.
Yes, and Bryan Cranston.
Yes, he is replacing Catherine O'Hara, who was fired from her job, and then blackmails her way into a producer role at the studio. And the show starts out with Seth getting the job and... Cranston is basically just like, we have Kool-Aid as IP. I want to make a shit ton of money like Barbie. And you need to find someone to direct this. And they get Nick Stoller playing himself because...
And Ira, keep going. Because I was like, they can't keep doing this. They kept going.
Nick Stoller is playing himself. And he comes up with a pitch for Kool-Aid Man. But... then Seth meets with Martin Scorsese playing himself, who has a pitch for a movie about Jonestown, which, as we know, they drink the Kool-Aid and die in the end. And so he tries to get Scorsese to direct the Kool-Aid movie, and it just turns into a beautiful mess. I brought up Entourage because it is people playing themselves. It's sending up Hollywood, but it's so biting and it's so funny that I'm like, whoever is running shit at Apple knows that they are actually running shit well, to be honest, because they're making fun of everybody else who does not know what the fuck they're doing. They're making fun of like Acme, Warner versus Acme.
Yes, Wile E. Coyote.
Yes, the Wile E. Coyote movie that David Zaslav buried at Warner Brothers, which is now finally getting released by Ketchup Studios.
Justice for Will Forte. We love you, Will Forte.
It makes fun of that in the fact that basically they end up, spoiler alert, having to buy Scorsese's film, Jonestown, so they can bury it so that it won't compete with the Kool-Aid movie. And it's just so funny. The second episode has Sarah Polley playing herself. And what I love about the show, too, is it sends up studio execs who are shitty and just want to make money, right? Mm-hmm. But Seth Rogen's character is also a send-up of a studio exec who loves movies. They love directors. They think that they are the hero who's going to save movies. And at every turn, he is fucking up people's movie sets.
Fucking up people's movie sets, a constant people pleaser, a liar. Every person in the industry who's ever said this to me, Jay, they love you. Could you get more followers? I cannot tell you there's a better time to watch this movie if you're in the industry. If you're outside of the industry, you're also going to love it because it's funny. It's Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg teaming up together again. They do everything great together. This is why we love Superbad. This is why we love the stories that Seth Rogen chooses to tell. He's so fucking funny in it. And I mean, there's an unsung heroine who is also in it. Do you know who I love?
Dwayne Perkins.
And who's at that table with Dwayne Perkins? Who is
Catherine
acting
Hahn.
A damn fool? Catherine Hahn is acting a damn fool in every episode.
Catherine Hahn, in the first episode, she runs publicity at the studio. When Seth Rogen tells her that Martin Scorsese is going to do a Jonestown movie with the Kool-Aid IP, she loses her shit. And I want to tell you, in the scene, she is Gucci down.
Gucci, that with a vest. Wearing a Gucci vest inside. a real Housewives of New York level vest. Well, thing is, it's more like it's Salt Lake City-esque.
Yes, it's very Salt Lake City. It's very Angie.
Yeah, I don't know what temperature it has to be to wear that vest inside. But with the short sleeve shirt and a hat, a visor, if I'm not mistaken, Gucci down. Truly like logo mania, think Cameron in the Oh Boy video.
Yes.
I love Catherine Hahn being unhinged because she's doing the shit that like you hear about later when you go, who threw a phone? She's kind of doing that thing that people... And I've had moments where I've seen someone act like this or I've been close to someone and they told me a story about a person saying, oh, well, this is a deal. And like literally on the other end of the phone, you hear, what the fuck did you just say? And you're like, oh my gosh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, it is such a good show to be watching right now if you're in the industry, just because it's a reminder of how just every facet of it sucks. And it's insane to believe that anything good ever gets made.
Oh, and it's also like, it's funny because it's self-effacing, but it's also funny because there's so many just funny classic comedy moments. I think it knows its voice very early. It knows what it wants to do. It knows where it wants to punch. It knows... Like, Ike Barinholtz is also very funny in it.
He's always so fucking funny. Charlize Theron pops up in the first episode. And by the way, I love Seth and Charlize's movie Long Shot.
Yes. Oh, which is sort of about this world a little bit because it's like he starts dating someone way more famous and hotter than him, right? Isn't that movie?
Yeah, he's a speechwriter.
Oh, yeah. I like Charlize Theron. Listen, in regards to Charlize Theron, we need better white African representation. And
she is the one to defeat Elon Musk.
Yeah, okay? Please.
Listen, shout out to @CharlizeAfrica, which used to be her Twitter name.
No.
It was CharlizeAfrica.
No.
Also, I love her. I love her so much, even though she did unfollow me on Twitter back in the day. I feel she had followed me at once because she probably found me funny. And then at one point she was probably like, this nigga is stupid. And then the unfollow happened.
At one point she probably was like, ooh, was that an accidental retweet of some booty? Okay, let me...
But the last thing I want to say about Seth and Evan Goldberg to tie us back into the Avengers Doomsday convo is I told this to Seth when I met him once. The Green Hornet is fucking underrated, okay?
Okay, all right.
And DC, if you want to be making good movies, you need to be going the Iron Man. You need to be going the Fantastic Four route. Stop focusing on fucking Superman. Stop focusing on Wonder Woman because we saw 1984 and I don't need to see her ever again. Okay? Gal Gadot away. Okay? I do not need to see her. Unless you're recasting Wonder Woman, I do not need to see her. But The Green Hornet was so fucking funny. It's an underrated film and we need to be doing more shit like that.
I say... Maybe they're going to do it. Maybe they're not. Whenever I hear about, oh, maybe they'll do a Booster Gold film. Okay. Maybe they'll do like an actual Swamp Thing film that's about the green. Maybe they do an Animal Man film that's about the red. Okay. I like that. I like these higher concepts. They're crushing it. Harley Quinn's an amazing show. They always kind of like figured that part of... DC Animation always figures it out.
Yeah.
DC Animation is a mainstay and will always figure it out. Literally, my TikTok is just full of people just showing Justice League Unlimited clips. I want them to figure out live action because I'm rooting for them. But you're right.
Yeah. Never in my life have I yelled at a studio like this. Let's just say that.
When my grandmother yells at me. That monologue from Tyra. When someone else says, when my grandmother yells at me, you go, why you put your grandma in this? My grandma, what's up? Also, anyone who's ever had to read an ad, now you understand what Tiffany was going through. Because Tyra was going off. And I want to be like, well, Tyra, you read an ad right now.
Yeah. Every week on the podcast, I understand what it was like to be on Top Model. Okay? let's just say that.
And by that, I mean they change Ira's race.
In some of these ads, I got to be white.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. This is a super strong sunscreen for fair skinned individuals who want to maintain their snow white, lily white purity.
All right. Let's take a quick break. But first, some quick housekeeping. Despite visitors to national parks reaching an all-time high, Trump has been cutting staff and cutting down trees like only a real estate developer can. Stand up for national parks in a new Touch Grass Support Our Parks t-shirt from the Cricut store. Head to cricut.com/store to pick one up. Then go touch some grass. Okay, when we're back, we're joined by Elizabeth Moss. Keep It is brought to you by Helix. And by he, I mean Lewis, because he loves his Helix mattress.
I just woke up from mine. As you know, I spring out of bed. It's like a full, picture someone doing the worm and landing on their feet. That's how I get out of my Helix sleep mattress, which is definitely, and no joke, the best mattress I have ever had.
I sort of slither out of my mattress and just fall to the bed, you know?
I find that sinister and ungodlike.
Well, go to helixsleep.com/keepit for 20% off site-wide. That's helixsleep.com/keepit for 20% off site-wide. And as you know, they got that whole Helix sleep quiz thing. So if you don't know what mattress you want, they're going to help you figure it out.
I think it's more accurate to people's souls than the Zodiac. So go to helixsleep.com/keepit.
Got stubborn spots, unwanted hair, or uneven skin? The CAPS Laser Center offers advanced solutions. They offer a full range of advanced laser treatments like Halo and Moxie that help reveal smoother, clearer, healthier-looking skin. CAPS is one of the top providers in the world for laser treatments, and their expert team delivers personalized care every step of the way. When you book your first Laser Center appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. So don't wait. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
We are so excited to talk to this week's guest. You know her from Mad Men, Us, The Invisible Man, one of my faves, and so many other of our favorite projects. Now she's starring in her Emmy-winning role, Jude, in the final season of The Handmaid's Tale, which hits Hulu on April 8th. Please welcome to Keep It, Elizabeth Moss.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here.
Oh, I'm very excited to be here. I'm a big fan of the podcast.
Oh my God, thank you. That's so lovely to hear. Big fan of yours. And I want to get into this final season of Handmaid's Tale. It is wild that it's finally ending. You know, it feels like, first of all, we're back in this Handmaid's Tale era of America as if we've ever left. Does it feel weird, like finally saying goodbye to the series after all of this time?
You know, I gotta be honest, I don't feel like I'm saying goodbye because we're still working on it. Mm-hmm. I'm still working on episodes 9 and 10, which I directed. And so there's so much work left to be done on those. And then we're also doing the sequel, The Testaments. So it just doesn't feel like it's over yet. Like on that, you know, like on Mad Men, it was clear. It was over. Like I got in my car at the end of the night and I drove away and I was done. It was like door closed. We are done. This does not feel that way. It's like it is very much ongoing. So
Elizabeth, what's it like being able to be part of such huge TV tentpole storytelling phenomenons? Things that really changed the way that people looked at media. You mentioned Mad Men, and now also with the amount of time you've been able to spend with June, who we met as Offred, and we get to see a character really develop, and you get to live in the character's skin for so long. What's it like being part of series that really have a kind of indelible impact on the American viewing experience?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for saying that. Secondly, it's honestly not something I'm used to at all. I don't know if I'll ever get used to it. It feels very bizarre to me sometimes, I feel incredibly fortunate, obviously. I feel very grateful. It's something I never would have anticipated, being a part of sort of several of these shows that people have watched and that have gone on for multiple seasons, you know? Like, you know how it is when you're, like, starting out? You're like, I hope I get the pilot, and then I hope it goes, gets picked up, and then...
We call it booked and busy. You're booked and busy.
I love that. I'm booked and busy. Thank you so much. But I spent so many years, like, not being booked and busy as well. So I still have that actor sense of, I have a job. I have a job and I have another job. And, okay, in 6 months, I'm going to have another. That's good. And then, you know, after that, I don't have anything yet. So that's a little scary. So I still have that actor sensibility just, like, in me. But it's pretty crazy. Like, I was looking at, I've done... Between Mad Men and Handmaid's Tale, it's been 18 years. 18 years of my life have been spent doing these two shows. It's insane. So I feel, it boggles my mind. I'm definitely not used to it.
A whole person.
A whole young person. Yes. I started when I was very, very young.
Yeah. So when you started acting when you were two, it was crazy. When you were cast in Mad Men?
Yes, at two? In Mad Men, I was 2 years old. It was incredible. Mm-hmm. It was amazing. That's right. That's my story.
So you are wrapping up this season of Handmaid's Tale. I mean, you just said you're directing these last two episodes. And I know that you've talked about not wanting to direct when you were on Mad Men before, because you were just sort of really getting into the character of Peggy and you didn't sort of want to mess with that sauce. What's it then been like working on Handmaid's Tale, producing, and then also directing?
Mm-hmm. Well, no one asked me to direct on Mad Men, let's be clear. So it's not like they were like, hey.
I said no to an offer that was not there.
Yeah. Like, wait, like, guys,
were you like,
guys.
Do y'all want me to? No? Okay.
Oh, no, you didn't ask? Okay, got it. No. So I think because I started as a producer on Handmaids, that was my trajectory to directing, actually, not as much the acting. I wasn't a producer on Mad Men. So because I was learning all of this behind the scenes stuff as a producer from season one on Handmaids, that's really what led me to then going, I think I'd like to try this other role. And I know a little bit more about how the sort of sausage is made. And I really didn't. I mean, it's so crazy. I've been doing this for so long. You'd think I would know so much after doing it for like 20 years. But really, until I started producing, I really didn't know as much as I thought I did about how to make a TV show, you know?
Do you have any moments that you remember throughout this entire journey of making Handmaid's Tale? Any moments on set where it was such an emotive and exhausting and kind of like rich actory day, and then you found a moment to find a laugh on set when like things were going terrible for our protagonist and for so many other characters, but the cast or the crew found a moment that was just funny as hell?
I gotta tell you, it's like every day.
Really?
Yeah, it is.
Wait, they laughing with the outfits on.
Oh yes.
They're giggling with the dresses on.
I'm telling you, it is like directing on that show is like being a kindergarten teacher. All I do is I'm like mom in the car saying, I will turn this car around. Like it, all I do is
at the Canadian border. Listen, we're not going to
exactly. It is like herding kittens, getting these actors to take things seriously sometimes. It really, really is. It's like, it's so different than what you would think. And it's so different from your experience watching it. It truly, especially if, like, I mean, Brad, obviously, Bradley Whitford is hilarious. And Yvonne has an incredible sense of humor. I mean, it really is. It's like getting them to settle down and stop joking around for a minute and a half so we can do the scene is truly my job as a director.
You hear that, future directors?
Yeah. So it's every day. It really is like it's we have a really, really awesome, really, really fun time on set. I got to tell you. And of course, there's moments of seriousness. And of course, there's moments where it's like, you know, not as there isn't as much levity, but it's pretty common.
And so as you are honing your skills as a director, I mean, you've been in so many varied projects. You've done these two TV shows. Obviously, I love you in horror movies. I mentioned The Invisible Man. Love you in Us. Also, you've been in comedies as well. And of course, the fantastic film Her Smell. You know, I'm just listing off everything you've been in, which I fucking love.
Wow, thanks for watching it. It's a smaller movie, so I appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, there's no such thing as a smaller movie to Ira.
I know.
Ira does not play.
It's true. I mean, that was one of the things I was so impressed with when I started listening to the podcast. I was like, he really knows his stuff.
Thank you.
You see everything. It's very impressive.
So when you are thinking about directing, you know, moving beyond Handmaid's Tale, maybe even to film, just sort of like, what are your sensibilities? Like, what do you like to watch? And what would you like to be making?
I love horror. I love genre stuff. So I love horror, right? I love horror. I love sci-fi. I do love that brand of horror that has a sense of humor. Obviously, Jordan Peele is sort of the pinnacle of that. Mm-hmm. I am not a Jordan Peele, but I do love that kind of being able to take a genre like sci-fi or like horror, or like a thriller, and have an injection of humor in it, have that injection of intelligence, of that smart sense of humor, I think is really, really fun. I don't feel any desire or need to make a super serious movie about a, you know, woman who's running away from her past. I feel like that's kind of my jam as an actor, and that's great. That's what I like to do.
But like, women on the verge of a nervous breakdown.
It's just, I don't think it's my jam as a director, unless it's a woman on the verge of a nervous breakdown in a horror film, in a you know, something that feels a little bit off, a little bit crazy, a little bit interesting in that sense. That's why I love working with Alex Ross Perry, who did Her Smell. And we did this movie that's even smaller called Queen of Earth together. And it is a woman on the verge of a nervous breakdown, but it's super fun and kind of funny and weird. Anyway, so I feel like that's more my wheelhouse. I guess we'll see whether or not I can do it or I'm successful at all at it. But that is what I am exploring for sure. Mm-hmm.
And you talk about your process as a director, but also you kind of brought it up as an actor, as a performer. Whenever you get to sink your teeth in something as meaty as a June, are you also kind of like, okay, let me take Elizabeth out of this because I know what I like, but let me really focus on what this character's world is. What are her truths?
It's interesting because I feel like there's a difference between what I like to watch and what I'm good at on camera.
It's a lot of actors you need to look in the camera and say that to.
That's fair. That's totally fair. I don't feel like everyone is just automatically good at comedy or anything like that. I feel like I can do it in with good material and a good director, but I do think that my wheelhouse is very much drama. And but it's not what I like to watch. I love to watch comedy. I love to watch, I guess, I don't know if we say dramedy anymore, but I love to watch that kind of thing. So for me, I guess sinking my teeth into something as an actor is my joy. Like, that does give me so much pleasure, and I love it probably more than anything. But it is very different from my sensibility as me. Yeah, talking about yourself is kind of weird, but I feel like I'm much lighter. I don't feel like I'm a super dramatic person.
That's fun. I think everyone loves a kind of like fun little anecdote about meeting an actor who's in all these serious roles or who's like been through so much, and you meet them and they're goofing around and putting up bunny ears behind you in the picture. And you go, actually, I love that. I love that. That's the kind of dichotomy.
Totally. I like it too. Like, I love when you show up on set and you think you're going to be working with somebody who's like, you know, good. Like, even Ann Dowd the other day, we were doing, plays Aunt Lydia on Handmaid's, you know, who's like the scariest character in the show.
Yeah.
Was doing bunny ears on the red carpet behind people's heads, you know, and she's like one of the funniest people you'll ever meet. And I hear that about actors that I love, like Olivia Colman, and that they're actually incredibly funny and light on set. And I love that.
Before I let you go, I want to talk to you a bit about theater too, because when I moved to New York in 2007, I was lucky enough to be able to see you in Speed the Plow.
Oh my God, thank you. Wow.
I mean, also, that's such a funny role too, you know, and just a funny play in general.
Who did you see in the play? Because we had, as you know.
I saw Norbert. Yes. It was after the sushi.
The heaviest, as you know, I've ever seen. As you know. We love Norbert Leo Butz.
Yes, I do.
I love him so much. And I think every actor that we had in that role was brilliant in it all along the way. But he, to me, was like, we nailed it with Norbert. Like, to me, it was like, oh, this is the guy who should play the role.
And I'm excited to see Glengarry Glen Ross soon.
I'm seeing it next week.
Oh, my God, you are? Okay,
yes,
great.
Yes, I'm so excited. You are?
Matinee. They're going to be cursing at 2 p.m.
It's perfect. It's exactly the way David Mamet would want it.
Exactly.
I mean, you know, there's a new revival of Glengarry, and I just want to know, like, what was it like for you doing his dialogue, being in one of his plays, you know, one of the ones with, like, a female character, too?
Mm-hmm. And which he doesn't have a whole lot of.
Yeah.
Just putting it mildly. It's literally one of like the two that you can do.
Her and Oleana.
That's it. I aged out of that one. Sadly, I aged out of that one. But 10 years ago.
We could do grad school. We could do a grad school production.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You are very kind.
The sequel. She comes back.
Ariana, the sequel. You are very, very kind. It was very cool because it was one of my only opportunities to do David Mamet. It was really exciting. And I obviously coming out of Aaron Sorkin around that time, and then Matt Weiner, who did, and all those beautiful writers who did Mad Men. Like, I was getting to work with some of the best writers alive. And so to get to then tackle Mamet's language was an experience that I will never forget and was so grateful to have. And I wish I could do every Mamet play. You know, I just, I want them to do female versions of all the plays so that us ladies can have a chance to do it. Cause I just think it's just incredible. I love his writing so much. That's such an obvious thing to say, but it was an incredible experience. And it was my first Broadway play. And, that language is so difficult to learn and interesting to learn. And as you know, he's very, very specific and everything has to be exactly word perfect. And the pauses are different from the breaths and those are different from being cut off. And that's all in the script. And you have to know exactly which one is which. And so it was really, really an amazing experience. And then to have this kind of wild ride of making the play and being involved in the play and having five different men step into the role. It was very much a singular experience. I mean, we got reviewed twice by the New York Times. Like, that doesn't usually happen. It was really an incredible learning experience.
You and Funny Girl. That's about it.
Is that it? That's so funny. That's so true.
But seeing you light up, talking about acting, talking about the process, talking about the respect for the playwright's work, talking about just being part of the American theater canon, it makes me happy to see an actor speak so passionately. That's beautiful.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you. I'm hoping to be able to go back actually and talking about a little something in 2027.
Okay, great.
So, keep it exclusive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yes. We'll be there to see it.
I hope so. I think it's if we can get it done, it's a beautiful
Starlight Express.
Yes, exactly. I'm going to be, it's a one-woman version of Starlight Express. It's just me. I'm playing all the roles.
And actually, now that I think about it, it has been a long time since we've seen a production, maybe since like Matthew Perry in 2003 on the West End of Sexual Perversity in Chicago, which does have a woman in it, David Mamet. So
get to talking to him about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a very good idea.
Yeah. thank you so much for being here with us, Elizabeth. It was an honor to talk to you.
That's very, very kind. I really am a big fan of the podcast, so I'm super excited and flattered to be asked to do it. Thank you.
Thank you. And Handmaid's Tale is airing April 8th, the final season. So check it out on Hulu.
Keep making me laugh, you guys.
Keep It is brought to you by Soul. Let me tell you something about the CBD, okay? It's for CB me.
Is that so?
Yeah. And when you get older, you get a lot of aches. Let's just say that. You know, I'm starting to feel like Kathy.
Oh, okay. I have an ache right now, but it's personal and about you.
Well, I'm sorry for making you act this morning.
Kathy Geiswhite, girl, we love you.
But, you know, a little lift from CBD is relaxing and soothing. And listen, we love a night out with friends, but when there are drinks involved, that night out creeps into the next day with all the post-martini symptoms that have only gotten worse in our 30s. And that's why I've been reaching for Soul's out-of-office gummies instead. They're the perfect little lift to keep the good vibes going and give me that light social buzz without the hangover.
Soul is a wellness brand that believes feeling good should be fun and easy. Soul specializes in delicious hemp-derived THC and CBD products designed to boost your mood and help you unwind. Their best-selling out-of-office gummies were designed to provide a mild, relaxing buzz, boost your mood, and enhance creativity and relaxation. The out-of-office gummies come in four different strengths, so you can find the perfect dose for your vibe. Choose from a gentle microdose, perfect buzz, a noticeable high, or a fully lit experience.
With wellness at the forefront, you can feel good about what you're putting in your body. All of Soul's products are made from organically farmed, USA-grown hemp and are vegan, gluten-free, and low in sugar. And if you like their out-of-office gummies, you've got to try their new out-of-office beverage, a refreshing, alcohol-free alternative perfect for summer sipping.
Bring on the good vibes and treat yourself to Soul today. Right now, Soul is offering our audience 30% off your entire order. Go to GetSoul.com and use the code KEEPIT. That's GetSoul.com, promo code KEEPIT for 30% off.
Got stubborn spots, unwanted hair, or uneven skin? The CAPS Laser Center offers advanced solutions. They offer a full range of advanced laser treatments like Halo and Moxie that help reveal smoother, clearer, healthier-looking skin. CAPS is one of the top providers in the world for laser treatments, and their expert team delivers personalized care every step of the way. When you book your first Laser Center appointment, you'll get a $50 CAPS MedSpa gift card. So don't wait. Book today at experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.
And we're back. If you're wondering what happens when a Netflix exec falls asleep with YouTube stuck on autoplay, we found out last week with the announcement of Pop the Balloon, a live TV adaptation of a YouTube dating series starring everyone on Love is Blind's block callers list. Let's get into it.
Okay, this is what I'm going to say. If the TV show Pop the Balloon was a person and it walked in the room on an episode of Pop the Balloon, I would pop the balloon. I wanted to go meta. I wanted to go in to get back out. They're doing this with reality TV stars. I saw Farrah Abraham, Johnny Bananas. I think if you've ever done the challenge, go ahead, get your Netflix credit.
If the traders turned you down, you're in luck.
Balloon popping.
Yeah, Farrah Abraham does not have a passport, I'm positive. So, pop the balloon it is.
Pop the balloon. You know what? Put Amber and Gary from Team Mom OG back on it. Watch them fight.
Bristol Palin.
Bristol Palin?
Come on. Okay, explain what Pop the Balloon is.
Pop the Balloon was an internet YouTube show popular among the same demographic as Carol's Daughters and Shea Moisture. So it's a very black internet show. It's on YouTube and the clips made to TikTok, and it would usually be a single person. It's a dating show. Mm-hmm. It's like the kind of like fastest way to get through Singled Out and Next. There's a host, there's a person who is looking for love, then there are a bunch of people who they want to see as potential suitors or suitrees. I don't know what the female, gender is fluid. So you have people who have balloons, and a person does a little interview, and then those people get to pop balloons if they don't want to date the person. And then if no one pops a balloon, that person has to pop some of their balloons. Mm-hmm. And it's a very satisfactory auditory experience, because sometimes it sounds like gunshots. sometimes it sounds like a bad neighborhood. And that is funny, but it also makes for a very fast show, which is why it's on the internet. Because sometimes you go, the people walk in and literally the man walks into frame and pop, 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 pop.
It's a nasty show. I would never be on this damn show.
I've seen people grab other people's balloons and pop them.
Yes.
So now it's going to be a Netflix live experience. I think the host is an executive producer, her and her, wait for it, I think husband. So I want y'all to know something. Married people are laughing at single people. I'm married. I'm married. Listen, I love it. Everyone should get a husband, even straight men. You need get a husband. But this married woman and her husband are laughing at y'all singles. They are laughing at what y'all have to go through. Some of these men going on here, oh my God, they really think they're the prize. And then also some of these women, I saw one where a guy said that he had a cat, and that was the deal breaker for all the girls. I said, what this? Oh my God. This
it is lost a plot. Reminder that everyone's standards are out of control. Let's just say that.
Kevin Samuels, rest in peace. Kevin Samuels would have got some of these folks together. And everyone, I know he was an evil misogynist, but he would have put some of these folks in their place, men and women.
Everyone's standards are out of control. What's funny is that Pop the Balloon is a little bit like, for straight people, it's a little bit like Grindr in real life.
Yeah.
The game show. But you Pop the Balloon, you block someone real quick when you get a hello.
But at least with Grindr, you're going to get to fuck. I don't know what the goal of this is. It is. And it's like also like they are inclusive. There are gay episodes that are just as terrible as the straight episodes. Mm-hmm. They are very transphobic. I'm going to put that out there right now. The transphobia on these shows is corny as fuck. I do not like that.
It's like the Shade Room.
Yeah. Shade Room. Every now and then Shade Room be like, can you believe Dwayne Wade loves his daughter? And they just go, comment below. And I go, y'all know what y'all doing. What do you mean? I definitely can't believe this multimillionaire who is married to an actress who has been in Miami appreciates trans people. What's going on?
Yeah.
What's going on? His daughter. But this show, I have many thoughts. One of which is, I don't know if this is the precedent we need to be setting.
Say that.
I don't know if this is the precedent we need to be setting. I know there's a lot to be said with like, get your money, young black woman. I'm so happy that you were able to like secure an EP role on this. I don't know. And some people go, it's harmless internet fun. We've learned since November that every podcast that turns 12-year-old boys into misogynists, that this internet fun does come home to roost. I don't know how I feel about it.
How do we feel about Yvonne Orji being the host?
She ain't married. She a virgin.
Yeah. She has never popped a balloon.
This is the thought. Michelle Buteau is married, loves her husband, loves their twins. Vanessa and Nick Lachey, married, love each other, can tell you how to work through some stuff. You need to be a contestant. No?
Actually, I would watch a show about her looking for love.
You know what? I'm a virgin too. That's how that works. Which hole? My ears? I've never been to Claire's.
I've seen you on Fire Island. The stuff's been in them ears.
I still have both of my ear hymens, everybody. Okay, they make a joke about Mr. Beast in the pilot episode of The Studio.
I just learned what Mr. Beast was recently.
I'm sorry. You didn't need to.
I learned like a few months ago what Mr. Beast was. And then I also learned recently that Mr. Beast and James Patterson are working on a novel together. First of all, who's doing the writing?
the 31 writers on James Patterson's staff. That man is going to write 13 books next year.
And it's already being adapted for film. By the way, they're shopping the film rights for this book about like people playing a survivor kind of game show. This is the pipeline we're in. The book's not even being written yet by the team of 31 writers. We're just going to make the, we're going to, you know, Frankenstein the movie out of this idea.
Everyone listening, this is why the studio is funny. Because what Ira just described is not an episode, it's real life. What Ira just described is the state of things. Mr. Beast appeals to kids with silver caps on their teeth.
And not grills.
Mr. Beast appeals to the boys who you have to go, hey, stop poking that dead bird with a stick, y'all. We're kind of there. So James Patterson, who is this like, I mean, prodigious writer, Alex Cross series.
Mm-hmm. Giovanni's Room. And it's a series. It's Giovanni's Closet, Giovanni's Basement.
Not to address the Giovanni in the room. I'm like so confused and I want to cry. This is like a very weird place to be in when you actually write books, when you act, when you write TV, when you do stand-up comedy, when you are kind of in this new quasi like YouTube to TV pipeline. I don't know. Also, Mr. Beast, he's torturing people. There is a word for when you make people do a bunch of stuff with money and you're not okay. Cause like TJ Lavin, I never thought TJ was evil when he was hosting the challenge. Because TJ is like, oh, I'm hosting Mark Probst. I never think they're evil.
Mark Probst. Jeff Probst, Mark Burnett.
Mark Burnett. Okay, yeah.
Mark Burnett is evil. Jeff Probst is neutral evil.
Yeah. I don't think they're evil. Mr. Beast, because he actually is also raising the money, he's evil. He be trapping these people.
He's Jigsaw.
He's Jigsaw. Look at his face. That's not his real face. I know he can take it off. Hey, Ira, you talk about a new Batman villain, Mr. Beast.
That would actually be good. Now you're giving James Patterson the idea for the book because you know they haven't written it yet.
No. I'm giving David Zaslav some new IP. You go, okay, this is what you do. Batman has a villain called the KG Beast. It's one of the first villains. He was like, I'm going to let this person die. You make it the KG Mr. Beast. It's so easy. Actually, you know what? Keep it. I am withholding rights to that IP.
Okay.
It's stamped.
Okay. I want to ask you about another internet series, though, because I've seen your tweets.
Say it.
What is a Kill Tony?
A wish, a prayer.
I Googled it a little bit, and then I was like, I'm just going to ask Jay to explain it to me because my head was hurting.
Okay, so Ira, there's this thing called slurs, and they're usually racial or sexual identity pejoratives thrown at people. So, okay, long story short, Kill Tony was kind of like amateur open mic at the, I want to say Comedy Store or in LA for a very long time. Tony Hinchcliffe was in LA for a long time hosting this sort of like bucket open mic situation where you go up for a minute. And if you do well, you get like a golden ticket. You get to perform with him. If you don't do well, you kind of get torn to shreds by this panel. And then when Rogan and all of his acolytes moved to Austin in 2021, that show moved to Austin in 2021. It has since blown up because a lot of men who work in tech think they're funny enough to do stand-up. So they pay money to put their name in a bucket to maybe get the opportunity to do this show. They usually do terrible. It is like the law of averages. There's usually like one or two good people every two-hour episode. It's also filmed and posted every Monday. And it has attracted a corner of comedy that is very bro-sphere, manosphere. We've kind of discussed it in the past when it comes to like post-election, like all these people who are inviting J.D. Vance, Donald Trump, and Elon Musk on the podcast. And so now, Kill Tony is kind of a cult following in Austin, so much so that people fly from LA to Austin to try to do a minute of comedy at a mic where the host is also probably going to call them a faggot. And not the way we do it, not with love, but with animus. So Tony Hinchcliffe is a good roast joke writer. Tony Hinchcliffe is, he was good at the roast of Tom Brady. He was not good at the Madison Square Garden rally where he said Puerto Rico was a floating garbage island.
Oh, so that's him.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a Tony that you want to kill, but it's also you have to kill. You could be one of his killers. He pointed a black man at that rally and just said watermelon. That level of artistry is on display. I have so many mixed feelings because I love comedians providing new opportunities for young comedians. I also don't think the best opportunity is for you to bomb on Netflix and then get roasted in front of a bunch of people if you want to continue a career in comedy. You know the first episode of American Idol? Imagine how many William Hungs exist for comedy.
Mm.
That's what I want people to realize. She bangs, she bangs. She moves, she moves.
I do kind of like the concept of rich tech bros who think they're funny getting ripped to shreds.
Yeah, yeah.
If it were just them, that'd be funny. Like, in their own ecosystem, destroying each other.
Yeah, but then there also are some people who maybe they're kind of okay at comedy, but it's not, you know, full disclosure, not my vibe, but I have a friendly relationship with people who have been on the panel. I have friends who have done the panel. I have people who I think are good comics outside of that situation. So I have some nuance regarding opportunities for comedians in an age where those things are drying up. I don't love it. I don't love using YouTube as a beta program to test your TV shows. Because then everyone's just going to go to YouTube, and then everyone makes all their money from YouTube monetization and Google ads, which we love. We love Google. If they're listening, they are. You are never really going to break talent. Mm-hmm. Don't you want to break talent, studios? I don't know. I don't think everything needs to be Kool-Aid. I'm not drinking this Kool-Aid. I don't think everything needs to be a universal hit before you give it a shot. That's my take, but I am also a traditionalist and pretty old because I don't watch Kai Cenat videos. So that's that on that. It's gonna be interesting. Some people are gonna regret wanting to bomb as their first thing they've ever done on Netflix. If you want a career to continue in comedy, it's gonna be really hard to shake that off.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like directing your first film out the gate without having done anything else, you know. Now, A24 let some of the girls do that, and it works. Death of a Unicorn is very fun.
Yeah.
Opus is not.
Where's T.S. Madison bottles? I need a client. T.S. and Craig, please. I need some bottles. I need some bottles.
The whole thing is sort of defeating, though, because I feel like as, you know, creative artists, you really want to be doing your best work. You really want to maybe make something that could become a TV show, could become a movie, could become a book, etc. And it's the industry just wants you to sort of like reverse engineer all this shit. It's like you want to write a book, but it's like, do I need to be writing a book series now to create a series, etc.? But does it matter if James Patterson and Mr. Beast are doing it?
It's because those eyes are already on Mr. Beast from the Beast Games and from all the silly YouTube videos. The scary part is, as a studio, you can choose to be a tastemaker or you can choose to be a banquet hall that can be rented out for the people who have the most friends.
Mm.
I don't love the idea of everything becoming a quinceañera. I think every now and then you need to be a restaurant, have a chef de cuisine, and have a prefix menu, and you go, listen, you're going to eat this because it's good and because I'm trained. Now, enjoy this. And you go, oh my gosh, this is amazing. This is wonderful. You don't get an Ali Wong. You don't get Tom Segura. I don't know many people who like Netflix likes. You don't get some of these wonderful discoveries. Taylor Tomlinson. If you have to be huge on YouTube first, you also don't find some of these amazing actors for TV and for movies if they have to already be TikTok stars. Because the fucked up part about being a TikTok star is you might have like created an audience that is loyal to you in one vein and they will not accept your transition or your kind of elevation and your evolution through things. I mean, I'm wishing people the best who have like other exploits outside of social media and TikTok, but it's hard. And that's why like personally, people see me and they go, oh, Jay, just stand up. Good. I don't want you everything, nothing else. I don't want you to be like, oh, what did Jay do? Stand up. Mm-hmm. He's funny. Cast him in something if you want to, but go see a show. I love to be cast. Cast me. You hear me? You hear studio? Me and Dwayne are good girlies. You know, have an episode where we go out on the town. Have a little fun. Me and Tyler. He's very funny. He's very fun on the show. But it's a what Future say? It's an evil world we live in. That was Future saying that. Future said that.
He also famously said, fuck up some commas. And
fuck up some commas.
And that's what the industry's about now.
They doing it.
All right. When we're back, it's our favorite segment of the episode. And I'm so glad that Jay is here for it. We'll be right back with Keep It. And we are back with our favorite segment of the episode. It is Keep It. Jay, what's going on?
Okay, this is my Keep It. I saw a Rough Riders jersey at Urban Outfitters, and y'all, keep it. Keep it. Keep it someplace far away from me. If you don't know who the Locks are, if you don't know who Eve is, if you don't listen to DMX, if you didn't see black people pulling dangerous stunts on motorcycles and music videos that you tried on your bicycle, please keep it. Oh my God. First it was FUBU. And one time I saw Ira out in a FUBU jersey and I said, oh my God, I haven't seen FUBU in forever. And then I saw Billie Eilish in a FUBU jersey and I said, Ira is copying from Billie Eilish.
Ira is
stealing stud points from black icon Billie Holiday Eilish.
I was reclaiming my youth,
reclamation.
Okay?
Reclamation.
I was reclaiming my youth because I actually wrote a passage in my book about being bullied for wearing FUBU because... Okay, so we could not afford FUBU at first because we shopped at JCPenney.
Yeah.
And the South one
Pole
time
was at JCPenney.
One time I saved some money to get a FUBU and then I wore it to school. Mm-hmm. And you know black people.
I did.
Everybody was like, oh, I got FUBU.
I had a platinum FUBU jersey and I said, listen to this. Platinum FUBU. With Fat Albert and the gang on it sometimes, boy, you can tell me nothing in eighth grade.
Yeah.
Oh, I was stunned. But yeah, Rough Riders, okay. We're getting into weird territory, Urban Outfitters. Rough Rider right now, then what's next? Fat Farm? We can't. We can't. I'm about to see a Mark Echo shirt soon. We got to stop. FUBU, I will allow.
I like the FUBU because I see people wearing FUBU out in the wild now.
Yeah. I love a good breathable mesh.
Yes. I think it's fun to wear a jersey. Yes. It's fun to wear a jersey, especially as a gay man. You wear a jersey.
Yes.
I'm serving trade.
Yes.
The first thing you think about when you think of me, right? Trade. Trading cards.
Yeah. The trades. And by that, I mean magazines.
My grandmother actually sent me... some trading cards that I used to have. I forgot that I used to go in on Marvel trading cards.
I was never a Marvel trading card person, and this is going to tell you a lot about me, but I was fucking up some Yu-Gi-Oh! Decks.
Okay.
Listen, Exodia the Forbidden One, every now and then, me and him came to rock your world. Every now and then. And I had a strategy. I didn't go to any tournaments. I never went to a Yu-Gi-Oh! Tournament, y'all. I wear deodorant. I never went to a Yu-Gi-Oh! Tournament. I had sex in high school. But every now and then, I could fuck your day up with a trap card. Yu-Gi-Oh! Might need to come back. Okay, at an Afties. Okay, you're playing some music videos. You're playing Ariana Dandelion. I don't hate the idea of maybe playing a little Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards.
Okay.
That was Edible and the Mushroom?
Yu-Gi-Hoen.
You. It's time to douche.
Speaking of douches.
Did y'all keep it?
You love a segue.
I love a segue. Came out clear.
My Keep It goes to Elon Musk.
Boo boo.
Listen. The African went to my home state.
Say it. That scamming ass African.
Scamming ass African. And I'm not talking about in your Gmail sending you something from a Hotmail account trying to get $1,500 out of your mama's bank account. I'm talking about Elon Musk is running through the White House like the Tomb Raider. Okay?
Yes. Going through our pockets.
And he went to my home state where he is trying to scam the Supreme Court and make it conservative there. And he's basically tampering with votes by, he did a contest where two people would win $1 million.
Oh my God.
By signing a petition that they would vote for this conservative judge.
Kind of a kill Tony situation, except for with democracy. We're killing democracy. You sign up for a bucket, you get your name picked out if you vote for a conservative judge for the Wisconsin Supreme Court, and you get $1 million from Elon Musk. The only thing that I would be happy about is that I know if Elon Musk gave me a check for $1 million, at least he could never make eye contact with me because of that whole thing he got going on. It is disgusting.
Yeah. Basically, you have to sign his petition in opposition to activist judges. And he gave away $1 million check. First of all, you know lottery curses, right?
Yeah. Yes.
You know, like people win the lottery and then people come out the woodwork. You get sued. Yes. You know, you could be like that woman who worked in the diner. I think her name was Tammy Knickerbocker. Like her coworker sued her because it was always like, we promised to, you know, to share the lottery, et cetera. Yeah. If one of us ever won, could you imagine like how fucked up your life is going to be? Everyone knows that you were presented $1 million check on stage by Elon Musk. What you think is happening to you the next day?
It's a damn monkey's paw gif. They will tear each other to shreds. This is not smart. So the first part of it, it's so anti-democratic to be like, I'm going to give you $1 million if you pledge to vote for this conservative judge. Because when the fuck was that how we campaign? Where the fuck is George Soros? That's not what is happening. Secondly, this man is doing this because he knows that he's unpopular and the policies he's putting through because of he's curried enough favor and he bankrolled this administration, they're not popular. You about to lay off how many health and human services workers this week, Robert F. Kennedy Jr.? You laying off how many federal employees? Do people not know that center right people also work for the federal government?
They're losing jobs.
This is what I'll say. I'm going to say it. That damn African is taking jobs away from good white Americans. Hey, it's 2008 again. That damn African, Elon Musk. I hate this. It makes me so mad.
If you're in Wisconsin, you should be voting for Susan Crawford. Brad Schimmel is psychotic.
And Wisconsin... Aren't y'all sick of people making fun of y'all?
I know I am.
Y'all got people like Ira Madison and Jada Essence Hall and Trixie Mattel trying to save y'all's reputation. And y'all letting that fool come in there and do that? I'm embarrassed. Aaron Rodgers left. Y'all got rid of him. Come on.
Ran Brett Favre up out of there.
Got Brett Favre up out of there. He went back to my state and said, hey, poor people, give me some of that money.
And also... Speaking of Brett Favre, you know, pulling the Jen Shah, scamming people.
Yes.
Elon Musk handing out $1 million check. I guess it's his own money. It's your money.
It's your money. And you want it now. Call J.G. Wentworth.
Like, he is scamming your money and then just giving it back to you.
It's stupid. That pissed me off. Also, Morgan Wallen. I'm going to say this isn't a keep it. This is a bleep it because fuck Morgan Wallen. What the fuck do you mean going back to God's country? I'm from the South. Black people live down there too. Queer people live down there too. I don't know what you thought was so weird at fucking 30 Rock that you had to run off. Bowen was not going to kiss you. Ego and Keenan were not worried about you. What is wrong with you, Morgan Wallen? Come on. I thought you had changed your ways.
I know. I was toe tapping to that Post Malone song.
You put out a good song after throwing a chair off a balcony and saying, my bad, nigga. And now, now we got to deal with this shit again. Morgan, I'm upset, but more than that, I'm disappointed. Morgan, when my grandmother yells at me like this, it's because she loves me.
You know what Morgan did it? Probably. I'm going to do some guesswork.
Do it.
He did a song with Post Malone, and it was a banger. It's a hit.
We can't deny that.
But Post Malone...
mm-hmm.
Beyonce, Taylor Swift, you know, mm-hmm. like too associated with faggotry. Morgan Wallen was probably getting clowned by his bros when they're sitting at home watching Kill Tony. They're like, you hanging out with Post Malone? You hanging out with Punk Malone? You listen to Cowboy Carter now?
Punk Malone? Punk Malone.
And that's why he did it, okay? He was bullied.
Punk Malone, that's going to be on my mood board for the Cowboy Carter outfit. Morgan Wallen is supposed to be the most masculine person ever. Then why you got a non-binary name, Morgan?
Oh. Let's say that.
Morgan.
Okay. Sound like you should be joining Southern Charm. Morgan Wallen sounds like she watches Bravo, okay?
Morgan Wallen loves Vera Bradley. Morgan Wallen. Morgan, you know what? Morgan Wallen put some lemon squares together for this for this SEC home game.
Jay, thank you so much for being here.
Ira, thank you for putting up with my silliness. When we get together, ooh, we have a time. And that's why we can only do it every now and then, because they don't let us. Crooked Media said, hey, watch out.
Crooked Media is a Sundown network.
No. April Fools.
Tell the people where they can find you. Like, you're on tour. You're always on tour. You are never in New York.
I'm in New York every Monday through Thursdays. I'm in New York. And then every now and then I got to leave. But I'm on tour right now. I'm going to be in Huntsville, Alabama. I'm going to be in New
God's
Orleans.
Country.
Right? God's country. I'm going to be in New Orleans. I might have an announcement about New Orleans. So make sure to follow me on all socials. I'm going to be in Raleigh, North Carolina. I'm going to be in San Francisco. Check all of that out. You can go to @JJurden on Twitter. Yes, Twitter. To me, hey, it's still Twitter. Instagram, you can also follow me on Threads. I decided to be messy on Threads. So if you really want to hear my opinions about some stuff, go to Threads. Because I was like, no one's reading Threads. No one's reading Threads. There are people are reading.
They
read it. I forgot. My team said, Jay, that last one, go ahead and take that down.
I went to Threads only because I miss talking about Bravo places. And the people who watch Bravo, Morgan Wallen, they're on Threads. Now, I did remember that Threads is Meta.
Instagram.
It's connected to Facebook and Instagram. Oh. You get a lot of dumbass people responding to you on Threads.
Threads is, I think it's 60% Facebook, 40% Instagram. Because it's Facebook down. And whatever you think that means, that's exactly what I mean. A lot of people being like, why do you care how they raise their kids? Okay. All right. Now. Okay. All right. Who should pay for the first date? Actually. No.
Would you love your trans daughter?
Exactly. Balloon pop. If you're a transphobe, you need your balloon popped. And you can take that however you want to take it.
Yeah. The Threads is very, very homophobic and transphobic, unfortunately.
But we love you, Mark Zuckerberg. You're so manly now that you do MMA. You look like such a man. you're Mark Zuckerberg. Oh my gosh, you're such a man. You're so manly. When I saw that fat ass on that surfboard, oh my gosh. When I saw that scary ass sunscreen covered face, Mark Zuckerberg, you are so masculine.
His hair's looking good now, though.
You talking about because he got a perm?
Yeah, his perm.
His perm, he got the broccoli cut. Wait a second. Mark Zuckerberg, I saw that hair. I said, we might need to do your 23andMe. I said, wait a second.
He's using Sacred.
I said, is Zuckerberg Ghanaian? What is his last name? Wait a minute. Okay. All right. Okay. Mark Joloff Rice. Okay. Mark Fufu.
You're a fool. Thank you, Elizabeth Moss, for joining us. We'll see you next week, and it will be 50% whiter. Don't forget to follow Crooked Media on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. You can also subscribe to Keep It on YouTube for access to full episodes and other exclusive content. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a review.
Keep It is a Crooked Media production. Our producer is Bill McGrath. Our associate producer is Kennedy Hill. And our executive producers are Ira Madison III, Louis Vertel, and Kendra James.
Our digital team is Delon Villanueva, Claudia Shang, and Rachel Gajewski. This episode was recorded and mixed by Jarek Centeno. Thank you to David Tolles, Kyle Seglin, and Charlotte Landis for production support every week.
Our head of production is Matt DeGroat, and Madeline Herringer is our head of programming. Our production staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.
And as always, Keep It is filmed in front of a live studio audience.
When it comes to plastic surgery, expertise matters, and CAPS sets the standard. Our team includes 7 nationally ranked, board-certified plastic surgeons. From tummy tucks, breast augmentation, and liposuction to facelifts and beyond, every surgical plan is tailored to your body, goals, and recovery timeline. CAPS is trusted for consistent, visible outcomes. Plus, when you book your surgical consultation, you'll receive a $100 CAPS MedSpa gift card. Expert care, exceptional results. Visit experiencecaps.com. CAPS, where confidence begins.